Welcome to the Tanz im August Podcast. This podcast series is part of the Tanz im August Festival, presented by HAU Hebel am Ufer. This year, it takes place from 15th to the 31st of August in 9 locations in Berlin. Several artists from this year's program have been invited to participate in a conversation. Each episode seeks to offer insights into their creative process, uncovering what's behind the decisions they made and the knowledge they gained along the way. The artists tell listeners about their current and past projects, revealing detailed information about the work that will be presented during Tanz im August. In this episode, Ricardo Carmona, artistic director of the festival, talks with Michelle Mora. She will present her new work Bokakova from 20th to 23rd of August at Sophienseele.
Hello, Michelle.
Hello, Ricardo.
So we are here talking today to speak about your piece that is going to premiere in the festival in August. But I would like first that I ask you to introduce yourself.
Right. I'm Michelle Moura. I'm a white person. I use glasses, short. I have dark hair, green eyes. I come from Brazil and I live in Berlin since 2017. I was doing my choreographic work in Brazil already. I left Brazil in a moment of the rising of the extreme right government that in 2018 elected Bolsonaro. Many artists, many friends of mine were suffering censorship. By the same time, I also met my partner and I arrived in Berlin because of love and to keep working as a dancer, a choreographer. Something else should I tell about myself?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. So your work that we're going to present is called Bokakova. So these are two Portuguese words that we could translate to mouse grave or pit. And this is a very interesting combination of words. Can you tell us a bit more how you bring these two words together and why it's also relevant for the work?
Yeah, Bokakova is an insatiable mouth. It's a mouth that eats everything. It's food, it's knowledge, books, it's forests, mountains, and it's never satisfied. That's Bokakova. Ailton Krenak, that is Brazilian indigenous leader and writer, he says that we are eating the world and we are not paying any bill. With this statement, he is demanding for a more reciprocal relationship and not just take, take, take. But also Bokakova is the earth itself that will eat us. And our mouth is also a hole, a grave. So the way that I translate Bokakova is normally grave mouth, thinking that we also eat things that disappear inside our body, or that the life of these other lives that we eat become part of ourselves. So Bokakova is the reminder that we are eating and we will be also eaten by the earth.
I mean, in your text, you also mention that you recently became a mother. And I wanted to ask how this also plays a role in the piece and this idea of the construction of this work.
Yeah, since I became a mother, life became very important for me. Life is not an indifferent reality. It's something that I think about a lot. So I'm much more aware that I'm alive. And I think that we think about life when we are sick or when we are living war. But if it's all good, we don't think about life. But it doesn't mean that death is opposite to life, because a cadaver is the life of other living beings. It's food for other living beings. That's what I want to say. There's a nice quote from the philosopher Immanuel Kocher that is inspiring me a lot. in this moment that is all death is a continuation of life with new face. But also being a mother made me think why we say Mother Earth, why Earth is gendered in the feminine, and why it's a mother. It considers that Earth is feeding us, is taking care of us, but it's only the woman, the one who takes care and the one who feeds. Or does the feminine gender to Earth means that woman and nature can be subjugated, exploited? Well, that's the thoughts that motherhood brought to me, and that's how motherhood is connected to this piece to come.
Yeah, thank you. Maybe I will go back a bit to ask a bit more about kind of this notion of exploitation of natural resources that also you just spoke a while ago. And I remember that in our talks, you mentioned a period that was a gold fever in Brazil. And also there was like these excavations of these big areas to dig gold. Can you tell us a bit more about this? And also what was your idea also to look into this period of Brazil?
This was the very beginning of the thinking of the project. I have very clear images from my childhood from Serra Pelada that is translated as naked mountain, something like this. This was in the 80s, like a very big gold mine in Brazil that had its images very much circulated in the television and also through photo pictures from Sebastião Salgado, you know, this great photographer, and had great impact because it was such a dramatic landscape, full of beauty and also violence and death. So this was like the first link that I did with Pokakova. But the extractivism of gold did not rest on that time in the 80s. Since nowadays, there is lots of exploitation of gold in the Amazon rainforest in Brazil and many conflicts with indigenous people as well. The Yanomami people, they call the gold diggers as earth eaters or land eaters. So that's how I made this first connection with Bokakova. And it was also in this moment that I started to be interested to think in a more reciprocal relationship with the earth, with Gaia. And I decided to learn more about this. Also to think choreographical practices or a choreographic device that can explore reciprocity.
So I wanted to ask you if you could think about like the first moment that this topic of nature and ecology became important for you. Because you did mention something a while ago about while seeing these photos and the exploitation of things, then you could also reflect upon this topic. My question is if that was the first moment or if it was already there before in your work.
The word Bokakova appeared in the piece Lessons for Cadavers. We were working on an action of digging, this movement of digging. Meanwhile, Michael K., the dramaturg that works with me, he was writing texts that we had as an idea to project in the scene together with these actions. And then this name appeared, Bokakova is not in the piece, but this name appeared as a mouth that is insatiable, that has insatiable desire for the world. That's the first time that appeared. So the mouth as a whole.
And then you continue also to research these topics for this new piece, yeah.
And then I departed from the word Bokakova until I arrived in the point of thinking in the eating, no, Bokakova eating, the earth eaters, the land eaters. So what the eating can teach us. So that's what I started to think further. I was also breastfeeding until last year. This was the moment that I was being food. And I thought that's amazing to be food and still be alive. I got the story of Val Plumwood, an Australian ecologist. She's not alive anymore. She was attacked by a crocodile. And in the moment that she was being attacked, she thought, I cannot become food for a crocodile. I'm much more than food. Well, what happened is that she escapes. She starts to think, why I'm an ecologist, why I thought on this way, that I am superior to a crocodile. All of us, we are food to others. So she devoted big part of her intellectual life to understand this sense of indignation that all ecological embodied beings exist as food for some other beings. And she also says, we must accept equality and reciprocity in the food web if we want to overcome the ecological crisis. The idea is that we would need to think that we are not so different as humans from the other beings, from the other species. Overcome this illusion of superiority, apartheid. That's, for me, great story that, again, made me really stay with the question of reciprocity, of what we are taking, what we are giving, what is our role as human living in an urban center, getting our food in the supermarket. I see this with some kind of uneasy, I can say in this way, no? Nowadays.
Yeah, totally. And I think there's also like a constant avoiding. So we are constantly avoiding the topic of death in our society in Europe. And there's almost kind of this ongoing refusal that we're going to die one day. And then exactly what you say, that we're going to be food for other beings like the bacteria, the worms that are in the ground and everything else. Yeah, I think it's always important to remind ourselves of that. Totally. And you've been mentioning also like several reference to indigenous people, especially from Brazil. And also in our talks and also in the texts that you wrote for to announce the piece, you mentioned also these ideas of non-Eurocentric cosmologies that also relate to climate, to nature. Can you share a bit more about this?
Yes, I found a myth from the native people Anishinaabe from North America called Vindigo. It is a mythical monster created to remind us from our greedy side. This myth relates to the time that winter was a synonymous of starvation, so that cannibalism could be a possibility. In the desperation of hungriness, people could eat other people. But the Vindigo is a lonely figure. It's a figure that once it became a cannibal because ate another person. So Vindigo was first a human being that ate another human being and becomes a monster called Vindigo. And this figure is banned, becomes very lonely and has nobody to share with, nobody to take care for. It's painful. And it's a figure that is consumed by consumption, and that will suffer the eternal pain of need. So the more this figure eats, the more the Vindigo is hungry. This word Vindigo might mean fat excess or thinking only of oneself. And also we could relate the Vindigo to multinational corporations that insatiably devour the earth resources. And we also could look to Vindigo footprints around us. Coal mines, gold mines, oil slick, closets stuffed with clothes. And we can think also that many of us or many people around us were beaten by a Vindigo. And they are running the Congress. They are walking in shopping malls. A Vindigo thinking is also our economic system that considers infinite growth on a finite planet.
Thank you for sharing that. It's also interesting to see how this notion that you describe just now about kind of this consumption and ongoing hunger to keep going and consume more and also extract resources from the earth, it's also very present in different parts of the world, as you described, because you were talking also about North America, South America with Brazil. You just mentioned also Australia. That's very relevant. But until now, we have been speaking a lot about this meta ideas and also very strong concepts. And I'm curious to see how you are then working in a studio. I mean, how do you translate this to movement or research and how the piece is coming together?
I have been thinking what eating can teach us, how eating and being eaten also can teach us. As I said before, I'm interested about webs of reciprocity and connection and how reciprocity can become choreographic device, a game, a set of relations, modes of being, what goes and what comes back, how things circulate. I'm also thinking that we are not alone in ourselves, but in confluence with many others that maybe I ate already or others that are part of myself through evolution, organisms that became part of my body. So how many lives are living within me, what they say, working around the idea that we are vessels for something other than myself. So I think that in this piece, I will be working again with some of the bodies that I created in the two previous pieces, Overtongue and Lessons for Cadavers, working again with speaking voice, with some sort of artificiality. This artificiality is already in the other pieces as considering that I am formed by many identities and asking what is natural on myself, what is natural on us, what is created, performed by us. Well, to be honest, I'm not sure that I am really outside yet. I made this decision. No, I made this decision until now because the last piece I was breastfeeding, directing and performing, that was very demanding to myself. And I would like now to be a bit more cautious, to don't assume this from the depart. But I really love to perform. I also know that I create a lot from myself moving and all that is moved together in my thoughts when I move my body. So I will be moving together with the dancers during the creation process. And then I will see if my position is still to be moving in the piece.
I think this is a good moment also that we are doing this episode because, as I said, this is still in the process of creation, so things can change. But I like a lot this documentation of this moment also that we are going through. Can you tell us a bit more about the people that you're working with?
Yes, I'm working with four dancers, Clarissa Rego, that was performing Lessons for Cadavers, and other three dancers that are working with me for the first time, Isabella Santana, Rocio Marano, Michelle Mendonça. Kai Duncan David is making the sound again. He has been working with me since 2016. Mike Conca making the dramaturgy, also an old collaboration. Annegret Schalke making the light, also old collaborator. Yeah, that's the team.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, it's an amazing team. I would like to go back a bit to the beginning of the talk because you said that you left Brazil when there was like a big shift in the government and Bolsonaro took over the position in the government. And this created a lot of problems for Brazil in general, but also for the artistic community. And now recently there was again another change. So the government is very different now. Do you see already like a big shift happening in terms of culture, also in terms of like respect for indigenous cultures in Brazil?
Yes, of course. There's a ministry now for indigenous people. The Ministry of Culture was destroyed and now is back. That means that these voices have space again. And for me, the country vibrates in another way. Of course, that there are marks from that years. You cannot come back. Things are transformed. But it's, again, a moment of hope, a moment of possibilities. Yeah,
that's very good to hear. I think for close the our talk, I would like to ask if there's a book or film that is really relevant for this work. In the last minutes, since we have been talking, you also gave some names and some references, but maybe a bit more specific now, if there's something that crosses your head.
Yes, there are three books that I consider very important for this process. One is Braiding Sweetgrass from Robin Wall Kimmerer. Other is Metamorphosis from Emmanuel Kocha. And another is The Symbiotic Planet from Lynn Margulis. But also, I'm very much inspired by the talks of Ailton Krenak. There is the Ciclo de Estudos Selvagens. I don't know how to define exactly what it is. It is a ciclo de estudos, circle of studies, with numerous dialogues, and they are on YouTube. They are in Portuguese normally with English subtitles, so it's accessible for people living in Europe who speak English. Many other things that right now are not in the tip of my tongue.
No, thank you for sharing. Yeah, it's already some very good inputs. Yeah. So I think we can close the talk now. It was a pleasure to talk with you and also to capture this special moment that you are still working on the piece. And yeah, I hope people will join us then in August to see the work.
Yes, now is exactly the very beginning of the creation. It's very different to talk about a process and a creation after the piece is premiered. I'm also curious to see how these things that I say now will make sense after, because I see creation as the creation of an organism as well that is activated by humans and that activates the humans back as well. For me, that's why it's always unpredictable to know what a piece will be. So let's see in a few months what will come from all these ideas that I shared with you.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ricardo. Ciao.